The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 3, text number 21, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari, recorded on July 5th, 2010, in Sydney, Australia.
So tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 3, text number 21. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yad yad acharati shrestas. Yad yad acharati shrestas. Tat tat devita rojana. Tat tat devita rojana. Sayat pramanam kurute. Sayat pramanam kurute. Lokastad anuvartate. Lokastad anuvartate. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Purport. People in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. A leader cannot teach the public to stop smoking if he himself smokes. Lord Chaitanya said that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. One who teaches in that way is called acharya, or the ideal teacher. Therefore, a teacher must follow the principles of Shastra, scripture, to teach the common man. The teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures. The revealed scriptures, like Manu Samhita and similar others, are considered the standard books to be followed by human society. Thus, the leader's teaching should be based on the principles of such standard shastras. One who desires to improve himself must follow the standard rules as they are practiced by the great teachers. The Srimad Bhagavatam also affirms that one should follow in the footsteps of great devotees, and that is the way of progress on the path of spiritual realization. The king, or the executive head of a state, the father and the school teacher, are all considered to be natural leaders of the innocent people in general. All such natural leaders have a great responsibility to their dependents. Therefore, they must be conversant with standard books of moral and spiritual codes.
Shri Guru, Shri Jata Padakamalam, Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha, Shri Rupa Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Savadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha.
We're in pretty bad shape right now, you know. Human society is in very, very bad shape. Why? Because we don't have acharyas to guide the human society. Actually, we have acharyas, but no one knows to follow the acharyas. That is a difficulty. So who is leading the way right now? Materialistic fools are leading the way. So what is that saying? When the blind lead the blind, where they end up? In the ditch. So we have a whole society which is simply falling into the ditch. What's the good of all this modern technology if they're becoming animals in the next lifetime? What advantage is it? You go to hell with your iPhone. What's the advantage? Is it? So if they can actually take guidance from those persons who are ideal examples of what it means to be a human being, and what is the qualification to be an ideal example of what it means to be a human being? One has to follow the scriptural codes. One has to follow the guidance of the previous saintly teachers. If one does that, then one becomes himself an ideal teacher. If he follows the great saintly teachers, he follows the scriptural codes, if he is himself has taken shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, then such a person also becomes a acharya, who can set the standard for others by his behavior, by his words, by his mentality. So the greatest lack in the modern day society is that lacking of obedience to the acharyas, following the way of the acharyas. The acharyas are there. It's not that they don't exist. The acharyas are there. Srila Prabhupada has created devotees of ideal character by his mercy. He has created so many devotees of ideal character, you see. But where is the following, you see? There's no following, that's the difficulty. So if the human society can realize that they're going nowhere by following nonsense leaders, and if they can instead take up following those persons who are actually qualified to lead them, the Mahajanas, then the whole world will become heaven on earth. Right now it's just the opposite. Every day it's becoming more and more hell on earth. Mm-hmm. It is not meant to be like that. It's meant to be a wonderful, happy place where everybody is peaceful and prosperous, you see. Because they're living in a way which is unnatural, which is disconnected from their actual nature. I mean, how you can be happy if you're living and disconnected from your actual nature? It's not possible. Can a fish be happy on the land? You may give him so much nice facility on the land. Can he be happy on the land? Give him a new Mercedes. You see? Give him a 12-string guitar. Can that fish be happy? Give him a big cigar. See, make him a movie star. You can do so many things to satisfy that fish on the land, but no matter what you do, that poor little fellow is going to be flapping in agony on the beach. Fine. Flapping in agony. Why? He can't breathe. He cannot breathe if he's out of the water. You understand? He can't breathe. But as soon as you put him in the water, no fancy facilities required. Just get it back in his natural environment. Immediately he's in complete bliss. He was laying there practically dead. As soon as he was thrown in the water, immediately he's swimming in full energy. Immediately, yes, full energy, you see. All his energy was gone, but immediately he's energized when he hits the water. Immediately. It's not that he's laying there. No, as soon as he hits the water, immediately he's energized. So as soon as we can reconnect with the spiritual nature of the self, immediately we become energized. We become full of life. We become enlightened with transcendental knowledge. As soon as we are reconnected with our actual natures as eternal spiritual beings, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So what is that system of reconnecting? That system is called religion, or it's called yoga, or it's called self-realization. To become reconnected with your actual identity. You see? So the spiritual master is that person who, he is our tutor, he is our mentor, he is our trainer that teaches us how to become reconnected. That person is required, according to the Mundaka Upanishad, Tadviganartam saru gurum eva bigatschat. If you want to realize that absolute truth, you must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. What is the Sanskrit? Eva bigatschat. If you study Sanskrit, you'll see there are different earned endings, verbal endings, which have different meanings. Like, gachati means he goes. You stick an N in there, gachanti, it means they go. You say gachchad, it means must go. You see. So that when you, the imperative form of the verb is called vidhi lin. So when you come to the vidhi lin ending, then you know, oh, there's no question. There's no option here. It's absolutely necessary. Must go. He certainly must go to the bona fide spiritual master if he wants to realize the highest truth. So, if we are very serious to become enlightened, to become liberated from this cycle of birth and death, then we must seek out a bona fide spiritual master, an acharya, an ideal teacher, who practices exactly what he preaches, who walks his talk. We must find such a person. Not some show bottle person who makes a big show and then behind the scenes he's doing all nonsense, you see. He makes a big show. That's called charlatan, you see. He makes a big show. But behind the scenes he's just an ordinary materialistic person. No, we have to find an actual acharya who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day, in all times, all places, and all circumstances. He simply has no desire other than to please Krishna, you see. He has no material desire. His only desire is to please Krishna. That person is qualified to guide us how to get out of the cycle of birth and death. Acharyavan Purusho Veda. Such an ideal person, he is understood to know everything. In other words, when someone has realized Krishna, their knowledge becomes perfect. They have perfect knowledge. Why? Because Krishna is the source of everything. Everything in existence is actually connected with Krishna. If we try to understand things in a way which is disconnected from Krishna, our knowledge of the phenomena that surround us will always be imperfect. Always be imperfect. But when we understand everything in relationship with Krishna, then that knowledge is perfect. When everything is seen as the energy of Krishna, then one understands, therefore it is meant to be used in the service of Krishna. And one's knowledge is perfect. So how do we gain faith in this principle? To do it ourselves, we have to find someone who's already doing it. We can see the exalted state of consciousness he has attained by living in such a way. That gives us faith, you see, when we see such an exalted, self-realized soul in our midst, when we see such a person, we understand, yes, it's real. It's not simply something, you know, pie in the sky when you die by and by, some sort of mythology about becoming spiritually enlightened. If we actually meet an enlightened person who's living on the transcendental platform 24 hours a day, and in the contact of that person, we can actually sense some of the ecstasy, the enlightenment, the pure love which is there in the heart of that personality, you see. That gives us great faith. That we got in Srila Prabhupada, you see. That we got in Prabhupada's presence. To know, yes, this is real. You can chant Hare Krishna and you can see God, you see. Because we saw someone who was chanting Hare Krishna and was seeing God 24 hours a day. We knew, by that contact with Prabhupada, we knew this process is real. Because we saw how it was working in Prabhupada, you see. And Prabhupada said, as I am doing, you should also do. He wanted, Prabhupada is the ideal acharya. He instructed us that we should also become acharya. In fact, he predicted, he told us in Mayapur, he said, now we are 10,000. And then we will grow to 100,000. And then to 1 million, and then to 10 million. There will be no scarcity of acharyas. So where are we going to get these acharyas? Are we going to import them from third world? Where's our movement going to get the acharyas? We're going to import them from somewhere else. Get them a special, in the U.S. it's an R1 visa. I don't know what it is here. Get an R1 visa and bring them in. The acharyas. No. We have to become the acharyas. That's a responsibility on the shoulder of each and every member of this movement, you see. Each and every one of us has the responsibility that we must become acharya. We must become an ideal living example of Krishna consciousness. Person Bhagavatam, you see. Every thought, word, and deed should be a manifestation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. You may say, well, how's that possible? It's possible by the mercy of the spiritual master, otherwise, it's impossible. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum lamyate girim yat kripa tamahangavande shi guru dinitananam. By the mercy of the spiritual master, a dumb man, a dumb illiterate man, he can give eloquent speeches. And a lame person, he can cross over the mountain. Even he can climb Mount Everest. A lame man can climb Mount Everest, you see. By the mercy of the spiritual master, you see, even that which is impossible, you see, becomes possible. So we may think, well, how I can become an acharya? I mean, I'm just a struggling soul, you know, battling it out with my material desires. I mean, how can I ever become an acharya? It is possible by the mercy of the spiritual master that even the most unqualified person, don't we see that in Chaitanya Leela? Jagai Madai, They were so unqualified, demonic, rascals, gundas, mafia. They were the mafia. Mayapur, the Navadvip mafia, you see. The head of the Navadvip mafia. They're very cutthroat criminals. And they became pure devotees, you see. By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, and especially the mercy of Lord Nityananda, you see. Lord, it was because of Lord Nityananda's mercy. So if we can connect with that mercy of Guru, who connects us with the mercy of Lord Nityananda, who connects us with the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, then even the most fallen, wretched, Jagai Madai type characters can become acharyas. And they did. They became ideal acharyas, those two brothers. They became ideal Vaishnava acharyas, if you can imagine, by the mercy of the Lord. So we can become. We simply have to take the blessings of the bona fide spiritual master on our head, take his instructions as our life and soul, dedicate ourselves to serving his instructions with full faith and determination, patience and enthusiasm. And then in due course of time, that metamorphosis, that transcendental transformation will take place. We will be transformed from Go-Das into Goswami, the servant of the senses. Gradually you'll become transformed, or she, into Goswami, a master of the senses. So it's really up to you. What do you want? You want to remain a slave of your senses, and birth after birth after birth? Would you like them? Or do you want to master your senses? Would you like to get out of this cycle of birth and death? It's your choice. You see. You want to remain in the suffering condition, birth, death, old age, and disease, or do you want to achieve eternity, knowledge, and bliss? The choice is yours. No one's going to force you. You have the free will, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna told Arjuna, now I've told you all these things, do what you like. You have the free will, Arjuna, to do whatever you like. So Krishna is giving each and every one of us the free will to do as we like. Now what will you do? That's up to you. You've heard this message, now what will you do with it? Will you think, well, that was a very nice message, and go back to your normal activities? Or you'll think, this is now will be the guiding principle of my life. And this message I have heard, this will now become the guiding principle of my life. You see. Choice is up to you. But I can guarantee you one thing, as you sow, so shall you reap. Whatever you put in is what you're going to get out. If you sincerely invest your energy in becoming Krishna conscious, you're going to have an amazing transformation of consciousness going on in your life. You'll be absolutely astounded. You'll be incredibly, immensely, absolutely astounded that it's so much happiness could ever be even possible to experience. That's how much nectar will be there. You'll be completely amazed that a person could actually be this happy, you see. That's the kind of nectar that's out there if you take to Krishna consciousness with all seriousness and dedication and determination. So that's available. That's an option. Take it or leave it. Choice is yours. So I can ask now if there's any questions.
Thank you for the nice class, Lagunji. In the purport, when you read through, it's mentioned that a leader should lead by example. If a person is smoking, he cannot tell others not to smoke. And on the other side, we also see that everybody should preach to others to take up chanting. But I'm not chanting purely, but how can I ask others to chant? This seems contradictory.
Yeah. If I, how can I tell people to become a pure devotee when I'm not yet a pure devotee? Actually, if you're sincerely striving to become a pure devotee, you're considered to be as good as a pure devotee by Srila Prabhupada. So the answer is by Prabhupada's mercy. That's the answer. Not by our qualification, but by Prabhupada's mercy. Prabhupada gives us the adhikar to preach pure bhakti. Even though we're only pure bhakti students right now, we haven't really mastered it fully yet, we're students of pure bhakti. He's given us the empowerment that we can preach pure bhakti. But one has to be sincerely engaged. It's not the halfway, strictly following the regulated principles, chanting 16 rounds, sincerely trying to do everything according to Prabhupada's instructions, and then such a person is empowered and given the blessings by Guru and Krishna to preach the science of pure bhakti. That's a fact. It's like a rookie policeman. He's his first day in the police force. But he has the full power to act as a policeman now. Even though he doesn't really know what he's doing yet, he has to ask the other policeman, how should I do now? He's new. But he's fully empowered. If there's need, he has a right to pull his gun out and shoot somebody dead. He's empowered to do that. Even though he's brand new, so because he's accepted this position, he surrendered to the higher authorities, and he's following the instructions that he's been given. So yes, the neophyte devotee, he doesn't consider himself capable of preaching pure devotional service, but he's been ordered to do so. That whatever you have heard, you repeat. He's been ordered to do them. Whatever you have heard, now you repeat them. I mean, don't you say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You say that, don't you? You know what Prabhupada told us in Los Angeles? Krishna lived at Govardhan Hill, but you were thinking, maybe. You got the point? In other words, we're still thinking, well, maybe Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Probably he is. I mean, you see, there's that skepticism we have because we're not completely pure yet. So we have that skepticism. That Mr. Skeptic is still camping out in the, in the campground of our heart. And we haven't convinced him to fully move out yet. We're maybe trying, but he's got his tent stakes pretty well deeply embedded in our heart, It's not so easy to kick out Mr. Skeptic from the heart immediately. Even after many years, he's still hard to get rid of. So, as long as you're repeating, Papa gave that example many times, you can tell a little child, my dear son, 1 + 1 = 2. He doesn't even know what it means. You say, my dear son, here's the beginning. 1 + 1 = 2 is one of the principles of mathematics. You see? And then when he goes into kindergarten, the teacher says, well, do any of you children know anything about mathematics? And he immediately raises his hand. He says, 1 + 1 = 2. He doesn't know what it means. But his father told him, this is one of the principles of mathematics, 1 + 1 = 2. So is he right or wrong? He's right. He may not fully realize it, because he is honestly repeating what he has heard from the authoritative source, therefore it's true. So as long as the devotee is sincerely trying to follow the instructions he received from his spiritual master, the instructions coming from the great saintly teachers, the injunctions of the scriptures, as long as he's sincerely trying his best, and he's given the right and the duty, not only the right, but he's given the order, you must do this. You must preach the science of pure bhakti. Actually, it's interesting in this connection. Prabhupada said that he actually sometimes would say, I am also not qualified. But because I am following the order of the qualified, therefore I am qualified. Even Prabhupada said, I am not qualified. Because I am following the order of the qualified, that is my qualification. So this is the mood of the devotee. He never thinks I am qualified to preach pure devotional service. He always thinks I am totally unqualified. Here I am, you know, battling it out every day with lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. I'm not qualified to preach about pure devotional service. But because I've been ordered to do it by my spiritual master and the previous acharyas, therefore I'm doing it. So in this way.
Isn't the Prabhupada also give the example of postal delivery man?
Exactly. Now let's say DHL people came to your door one day and they say, well, you know, we've just been informed that you had a long lost relative who was a multi-billionaire, and we have a cashier's check here for $100 billion to deliver to you. Now would you say, but how much are you worth? What is your net worth? If you're not a wealthy man, I'm not going to take it from you, because you know you're working for DHL. That means you're just a poor salaried bloke like me. So, I won't take it. No, the $100 billion cashier's check. Yeah, I'll take it. Sure, as long as the check is genuine, authentic. See, if it's honestly given. Even if that person is not a wealthy person, if he delivers to you, honestly gives you a genuine check, it was handed to him, then of course it is bona fide, it's authentic. So even if the devotee doesn't have, he's not completely on the highest level of Krishna consciousness, he is simply faithfully delivering to you what has come down from the previous acharyas. By their mercy, the full potency is there in those words. You understand? It's not hidden. He doesn't have the potency to give you $100 billion. He's only making, you know, five grand a month. He doesn't have the potency to give you even, $1 million or even $100,000. Personally, he has no potency to do that. But because he is honestly giving a genuine check that's coming from an authorized source, therefore the full Shakti is there in that check. So even though I may not be a pure devotee, you see, because I am giving you the authorized message which is coming with full potency from the previous acharyas, the full potency is there in that message. You take this check, you'll be worth $100 billion. If you take this message I'm giving you and you take it as your life and soul, you become a pure devotee. That's a fact. You take this message I'm delivering to you, coming. Prabhupada has given me this message. It was given to him by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura, up to Krishna and Vishnu. So you take this pure message, which has the full potency of Srila Prabhupada, the full potency of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, etc., etc. If you take this message, it will have the full potency. You take it as your life and soul, it will give you the full potency to become a Mahabhagavat. Okay? Any other question? Yes.
Thank you, boys, for your nice class. What happens is, the people, ask people who come from India or, Indian subcontinent, they come across a lot of gurus. So I was just wondering, what does it take for someone to come across a bona fide spiritual master?
Why does one become a bona fide spiritual master?
What does it take for someone?
What does it take for someone to come?
What does it take to become one?
Yes.
Yes?
Someone.
Okay. There are a number of criteria for becoming a bona fide spiritual master. The first thing, and really essentially the only thing, is to become a bona fide disciple of a bona fide spiritual master. So unless one cannot become a guru simply on his own, he has to can only become a spiritual master by becoming a completely sold out disciple of a bona fide spiritual master. And when that spiritual master then orders him, on my order, now you become guru. You see, then he can act as guru. Otherwise, none. So, the bona fide spiritual master means he is coming in an authorized line of disciplic succession from Krishna, as confirmed by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text number 2, evam parampara praptam mrimamra jarshayo vidu. This knowledge was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. So this is how the knowledge is coming. It's coming in disciplic succession. Krishna is Adiguru. He's the original spiritual master. So you have to find a teacher who is an authorized, unbroken line of teachers going back to Krishna himself. Because if the spiritual master is an impersonalist, or he's a demigod worshiper, he's not bona fide. He has to be coming as in a line of succession from Krishna, and he has to repeat the Bhagavad Gita as it is. If he presents some new, different teaching, then he should immediately reject it. Indisciplic succession means he's not inventing something new, he's just repeating what is there in Krishna's Bhagavad Gita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He has to present the Bhagavad Gita exactly as if it was spoken by Krishna to Arjuna. Now, he may make it understandable or relevant in the contemporary setting, and that is one of the qualifications also of a bona fide spiritual master. He's very expert at taking that message and packaging it in such a way for a particular time, a particular place, and a particular situation, so the people in that time, place, and circumstance can understand and relate to it. He has to follow, as we read here, he has to actually follow the teaching that he's teaching. He can't be saying, give up smoking while you smoke. He has to be strictly following the principles himself, and he has to be a living embodiment of those principles. Most of the gurus we see nowadays, they preach impersonalism. They declare directly or indirectly that they are God. It's like somebody sent me an email about some guru, and they were saying they were showing what a wonderful guru he is. There's this Vedic sayings, Aham Ramasmi and Tattvamasmi. So the actual meaning is thou art that means your nature is Tattvamasmi means you are spiritual in nature. That's what it actually means. And Aham Ramasmi means I am spirit. But they mistranslate it as Tadvavasmi, mean they translate that as you are God, and Aham Brahmasmi they translate as I am God. You see? So this person was saying, our Guru Maharaj is so humble, he never says Aham Brahmasmi that he's God. He simply says, Tadvavasmi, you are all God. He's a very pure teacher because he has no false ego, no ego. Because he never says that I am God. He just tells all of us that we are God. You see, Tattvamasmi, you are all God. He's a very good guru because he has told me I am God. You see, but this idea is completely bogus. How you can be God and be under the control of the material nature? God never comes under the control of the material nature. So if you take such a person as your spiritual master because you're flattered by the idea that, oh, wow, now I get to be God. It may sound very good on paper, but when you try to put it into practice, you won't get very far. You run up against all kinds of obstacles if you try to be God. Birth, death, old age and disease, adiyatmik, adibhautik, adidaivik, so many obstacles there, you try to be God. I know, I tried it many years ago. I read a book that told me that I was God, and I tried it for a few days. I was pretty fired up. But after a while, it became very obvious. You know, the material nature was smashing me this way and that way. It was very obvious I wasn't God, you see. That answer your question? Okay, next question. These were great questions. Anyone else have questions? Every question is a great question. So I'm sure. If you have a question, yes.
It's very difficult to overcome the modes of material nature, but how to overcome them?
Yes, it is difficult, and it's also not difficult. The material, if you try to overcome it by your own strength, it's impossible to overcome it. It's an insurmountable ocean. If you try to swim across the ocean, will you make it? No. Samashvita ye palapat plava plavang mahatpadang shon punyajisho marare Bhavan Bodhir Vatsa Parang Param Padam Padam Vidam Yad Vibhadam Nate Sham. You know that verse? So nice poetry, I mean, really defeats Shakespeare, you know. Vyasadeva, really, he can out rhyme Shakespeare like anything. So nice poetry. Samashrata ye palava plava plavang punat mushan ponyu shomarari. Bhavam Bodhir Vatsa Parang Parang Padam 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 Yad Vibhadam Nate Sham. Shakespeare can't even get close to that. Really, can't get close. So the translation is, for one who takes shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, who is famous for killing that rascal Mula and for being the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, this vast, insurmountable ocean of material existence becomes reduced down to the amount of water contained within the hoof of a calf. The destination of such a person is Parampadam, the Vaikuntha realm. Not that place, Padampadam Yadvipadam Natesham. Not that place where there is danger at every step. So if you try to make it on your own, my dear sir, you will find it is an insurmountable ocean. But if you will take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, it'll just be a little vatsapadam, the hoof print of a calf. Would you have any trouble stepping over the hoof print of a calf? No. You can fit in the palm of your hand. You can easily step over it. So it is difficult for those who don't take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. And for those who do take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, it is a piece of cake. Yeah. Any other question? Yeah.
Srila Gurudev, in the previous retreat you mentioned about the source, everything comes from Krishna, and Krishna states that Aham Sarvasya Prabhu. If this is the case, then this we come from Krishna, and this mentality of lording it over others, that also comes from Krishna.
Of course.
What's wrong in using that? So in that case I can think that I am the Lord because I come from Krishna.
The difference is you're Krishna is the big Lord and you are the tiny Lord. That's the difference. If the tiny Lord thinks he's the big Lord, then there's a problem. You were meant to be the Lord of your senses. That is called Goswami. It's good if you become the Lord on that level. Instead of being the slave of your senses, you become the Lord of your senses. That's very good. So you become Lord within your rightful territory, and that's very good. You should do that. But don't go beyond your limit. Then you're in trouble. Yeah. Any other question? Yeah.
Envy is supposed to be a condemned emotion.
Yeah.
But then we say that everything comes from Krishna. Anger,
yes, of course. Everything is there. Even envy is there in Krishna, yes? Huh?
So, but it is supposed to be condemned. Envy, because Krishna
In Krishna, envy is wonderful. In Krishna, everything is perfect. When he is envious, that envy is a wonderful thing.
Can we have an example of envy in Krishna?
Huh?
Example of envy in Krishna.
I remember, I read where Prabhupada does give an example of Krishna's envy. I forget what the example was. Prabhupada gives an example of it, how he kills some demon. You remember how he mentioned some an example in
Bhagavad
Gita?
Example in Bhagavad Gita, he wants all exclusive love.
Yeah, that's also there. He says, yeah. Krishna is the original envious lover in one sense. He says, for those who worship me with exclusive devotion, he wants all your love. If you give your love somewhere else, he's not very happy. So that's, in that sense, we can say, yes, that is his envy. It's like, if a boy loves a girl and then he starts loving another girl too, she becomes envious of that other girl, isn't it? So that original nature is there in Krishna. He doesn't want you to love anybody but him. He wants all of your love, completely everything. Of course, the difference is when you love Krishna, then through Krishna you love everyone perfectly. So nobody's really left out. That's why Krishna wants us to love him, because then our love becomes perfect, because everyone is his part and parcel. Everything is his energy. So that his envy is good envy. But for us, who are not the source of all existence, envy is bad. And in Krishna, envy is good. Good thing. He wants all of our love. You give me all of your love. I want every ounce of your love. You see. You give all of your love to me. You see. Any more questions? So, if I have Siksha Guru, what is the need of Diksha Guru? Well, the actual injunction is, as Prabhupada states in the Nectar Devotion, that unless you're initiated, you can't go back to Godhead. So, you may have Siksha Guru, but if that Siksha Guru is bona fide, he will order you to take Diksha. If he doesn't order you to take Diksha, he's not a Siksha Guru. The bona fide Siksha Guru will tell you, you must get initiated. If he doesn't tell you that, he's not a Siksha Guru. He's a charlatan. You understand?
If the guru is accepting disciple and he is the strong Siksha Guru, then why not take initiative?
Prabhupada says that generally, the one who gives Siksha, he becomes the Diksha Guru. In other words, in the beginning, I don't even know what Diksha is. All I know is I'm looking for a guru, so I go and I take Siksha from this guru and I'm very inspired by him. And I want to take shelter of him and follow his instructions. And he explains to me what Diksha is. I didn't even know what Diksha was, you see. And the spiritual master says, well, this is part of the process. Now you want to follow me, be my disciple. So that means you have to be initiated. That's called Diksha. So it's Diksha is a contract. Actually, Diksha is a Siksha contract. That's actually what it is. That I'm very inspired by your Siksha. When you give instructions, I'm so enlivened and inspired by your instructions. I want to follow your instructions now. Are you willing to dedicate yourself to follow him forever? Are you willing to make a pledge you will follow my instructions forever? All right. Yes, Guru Maharaj, I will do that. All right. Now I will initiate you, you see. Diksha is a Siksha contract. You make a contract to continue following that Siksha throughout the life. That's all it is. So if you're inspired by someone's Siksha, why would you not want to continue following their Siksha? And if you want to keep following their siksha, that means now you're a candidate for diksha, to make a pledge to follow his siksha throughout the life. That is diksha. You understand? Does that answer your question? Okay. Yeah.
Just following up on that point, if someone takes initiation from a spiritual master and then that spiritual master would later fall from the path, would it require them to take diksha again? Like some people take diksha again, some people don't.
Is it required to get reinitiated if your guru falls by the wayside?
Does that mean like you've lost that connection and you need another connection?
The answer is, it depends. Because actually that spiritual master, when he initiated you, he was in disciplic succession at that time. He connected you not only with himself, but he connected you with all the previous acharyas as well. So you actually got connected not only with him, but you also got connected with all of his predecessor acharyas, you understand? So let's say he slips along the way, he has some difficulty, and it does happen. It's there in the Bhagavatam even. I mean, Shukracharya